From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 493, Azure Stack with guest Jeffrey Snover. Recorded Wednesday, September 28th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I wanted to introduce you to the first of a series of shows sponsored by Atlassian's Jira Service Desk. This first show was recorded at Ignite in Atlanta with Jeffrey Snover, and it was a bit noisy there, so I apologize for the noise, but let's jump right into it, and thanks again for listening. Mr. Snover, Jeffrey Snover, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Having a fantastic Ignite.
And I could do the big bio, but I think everybody knows who you are. I mean, these days, a technical fellow and well-earned, father of PowerShell. You know, those are the important things.
Yeah.
And you just finished up with a group of young inventors.
Yes.
When I found you. Nice group of people. Very, very smart.
Yeah.
And we ended up talking a little patent rules and, you know, what it means to be a startup and different sales strategies.
Yeah, and it was great for you to come in and share your experience. That gave a flavor that I wasn't able to add. I thought that was awesome.
Well, thanks. It was a fun, it's an interesting part of life, right? To get involved in companies and grow those things out that way. And I've never been good in big companies. I've always been a small company guy.
So, uh-huh.
You know, I love Microsoft. I just stay on the outside of it. But you, sir, have climbed to the upper echelons of that company through this amazing product called PowerShell and your all-around awesomeness. Big conversations here at Ignite about Azure Stack.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
Yeah. Let's go start from the beginning because, you know, there's too many Azure products. I think people get confused as to what is what.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So basically Azure, the heart of it is taking the power of Azure and being able to run it in your data centers.
Love it.
Okay. So let's talk about that, right?
That's cloud as architecture versus cloud as product.
Yeah, exactly. Or cloud as a model versus cloud as a place.
Right, okay? Right.
Now, I think that here there's been a lot of confusion because that story is so compelling when you say it in a short form. Everyone then projects all their hopes and dreams into it.
Right.
And so I think I'm on the disabuse campaign. Right.
It's a reality check.
Exactly. So first, it's not all of Azure. Good Lord. Azure
That's
is
too much
absolutely
stuff.
Enormous. Yeah. So what is the subset of Azure? Well, what we did was we worked with the Azure guys, worked with Rusinovich, with Corey Sanders to say, hey, what are the things most people are using? And in particular, what are the things most people are using to build modern cloud applications, right? So first, lots of people use an IaaS.
Yep. So virtualization,
and then table queues, blobs, things like that.
Yeah. So place to store your data.
Exactly. So we're taking sort of that core subset. There's more than that, but we've defined that core subset, and that's what we are initially going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then I'll work with Rusinovich, Corey, et cetera, to then say, hey, what are the next set of scenarios that we want to light up?
Right.
And then based upon those scenarios, types of applications,
right,
think of those, we'll define what APIs and services need to come next. And so we'll start off small, and then it will be a growing list. So for instance, in my talk with Rusinovich, I showed let's take a template from the GitHub gallery,
right,
and now we're going to run it and deploy it in both places. However, in order for that to work, I had to make some edits. So for instance, in Azure, you can, in the ARM template, you can auto-register some DNS entries.
Right.
Well, Azure Stack doesn't have that. So what you did was remove those things. And then you had to set the API version to be one that was consistent across both.
Right.
So sort of what I'm saying is now that we have Azure Stack, or when we have Azure Stack, it will allow people to be able to target applications that run in both places. Not everything in Azure will run in Azure Stack.
I got to imagine, like, Azure tends to be updated so often, you're probably going to have newer versions available to you in Azure than you would be at home.
Yes.
So you're actually going to have to dial down version numbers a little bit to make them symmetrical.
A little bit. And here, there's another thing to talk about. So initially, to get this out the door, we're targeting a particular version of Azure. And then Azure, as you say, they're deploying every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So that when we ship Azure Stack, Azure will be ahead of us by a pretty good amount. I'm not sure how much, but a pretty good amount. The very next thing I'm going to do is to get up to date with them.
Right.
The one way you're guaranteed to never ship is to chase a moving object.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And so that's why to get this out the door, we pick a target, and then that's what we're going to deliver, and then we'll sync. But the goal is to be very close with Azure. I mean, the whole here's the thing. If you want to understand the heart of Azure Stack, it's that it is we strive to be completely consistent with Azure.
Nice.
Okay? So what does that mean? If something comes out, Azure comes out, we want to be there, not just at some point in time, as close as possible. Because I want you as a developer to be able to write your application and then say, hey, it runs where? In Azure and everywhere in the world.
Anywhere I want it to run.
Now, that's a key point for the value proposition to work, for the ecosystem to work.
Right.
Everybody's got to be running roughly the same version of Azure.
Right.
So what that means is when Azure releases, we're going to be able to pick that up, and then we will make it available to the Azure Stack customers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Azure Stack customers will have some flexibility in when they apply those changes,
sure,
but within a time window.
Right. You're only going to support so many old versions of different libraries and things in regular Azure.
Yeah. So basically, you'll think of, we haven't figured out the time.
Yeah.
One of the things we're doing here at the Ignite is talking to customers about what degree of control they have.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, here's what we don't want to do. We don't want to say, hey, there's a new version of Azure. You have to install it right now.
Yeah.
The day before Black Friday.
Right.
Right. No.
Yeah. Not a good idea.
No. So we want to give people
control. But you don't want a 10-year time horizon either. You don't
want
to think operating system horizon.
Exactly. So it's probably going to be in the order of months. Not days or weeks. But certainly people will not be supported if they're a year out of date. That's certainly
that
the case.
So less than a year. Are we generally thinking it's an on-premise and in Azure scenario, or are we thinking other public clouds or other, remote service type?
Yeah, other remote services as well. Mm-hmm. Think service providers.
Right.
Trusted hosters.
Yeah, the rack spaces of the world. And,
exactly.
Those kinds of entities where I don't want to run my own data center, or my data center's hit constraints, I've moved to this third-party hoster, and then perhaps I'm dancing with the cloud as well. So there's sort of three places I could be running this.
No, exactly. So a lot of people just heard about an example today. I guess I won't give the details, but basically they love the cloud idea, but they are not letting their data outside of their control.
Right.
Right. So one answer could be fine, buy your servers and do that. The other, and by the way, is their control. They're not letting it out of their country.
Right.
Okay,
that's
so
the usual
that
sovereignty
sort of gives
issue.
You the hint of who it might have.
I can think of a few
sort of
like that.
The sort of people it was.
Yeah,
it's not going out of their country. So one choice is, well, they buy the servers and they run Azure Stack itself.
Right.
Another is that they pick a trusted provider that's in
their
nation, and they run it and they get the service from them.
Sure.
So that's what I'm so excited about Azure Stack. You really need to think of it as an extension of Azure. Azure everywhere.
What's interesting when you play the data game, and I've worked with customers like this, where it's like, oh no, we need to respect data sovereignty, but processing could be elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so we're actually starting to this idea of splitting up different parts of the application, but the data lands in the sovereign country required.
Oh, so, that was actually my demo with Rusinovich.
Really?
Was what I said was, so the scenario was, hey, I'm a small company, and I've modernized my heritage application by taking an Oracle system and deploying it on Azure Stack. And we have regulations that require that runs on premises.
Right.
But I want to take advantage. I want to go global. I mean, I've heard about this thing Azure, and I think I can use it to go global. So went to the Azure website, found this e-commerce application, deployed it. It has a storefront, and that's deployed in the U.S. West region.
Right, nice and close to where your customers are.
Right, and so when an order is completed, it puts it in a queue, and then I just have the service that reads from the Azure queue in my Azure Stack, reads from the Azure queue, puts it in a Oracle database to fire off back-end processing.
Right.
But then say, well, hey, having done that, now I can extend it to EMEA and Asia and Brazil. Here's the thing. Customers want a great user experience.
Sure.
Great user experience is a function of latency.
Yep.
You don't get to negotiate with latency.
No. The speed of light is kind of immutable.
Indeed.
You can't argue with it very much.
So you have to be close to have that nice low latency experience.
Sure.
Now, having said, okay, I got your order, it doesn't matter whether that order gets transacted in the course of a minute or whatever.
But so that's a known set of latency, right? We're not going to fill your order in that second.
Exactly.
We'll send you an email when we finish your payment processing, when we pick it and so forth. But that can be completely asynchronous and you can do that wherever you want.
Exactly.
That's so, really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool example.
Yeah, it's a really interesting scenario for all of that. So, I mean, the challenge, of course, is sufficient subset this time around.
Correct.
I mean, is this existing Azure customers looking for answers, or you think it's more of a greenfield sort of scenario? They're building more new implementations that they want this option.
Yeah, actually, I think it's more people have been excited about the Azure and the potential, but just say, hey, I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, for various reasons.
For various reasons.
As soon as you get outside of certain countries, it is very hard to talk about the cloud because it's not in their country directly, or it's, you know, there are various rules for any of those things.
So, you know, Mark, in our talk, and so, you know what, I encourage people to go. We recorded that as a very popular talk.
Yep.
You just search for Mark Rosenovich and Jeffrey Snover. We only did one talk together this time. And he talked about what he believed were the durable scenarios for the hybrid cloud.
Right.
Things where data sovereignty, compliance, things like latency. So imagine you have a factory floor and you want to have an application that has, you know, control of those components.
Yeah. Some SCADA elements, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then there are other scenarios where, you know, honestly, it's just comfort.
Yes.
Like, hey, I'm just not comfortable
putting my stuff
in the cloud.
Some of these hybrid scenarios, I think they perceived as transitory, but they may never finish the transition.
Yeah. Now, my belief is that for a whole bunch of the people that fall into the category of, hey, I'm just not comfortable yet, so I think I want to run it on-premises, that once it's available on-premises and they have that option, they'll at some point realize, you know, the heck with it.
I am comfortable.
Right. I really do.
And I do think part of that is just evaluating cost and effort and risk.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a while to get through all of that.
Yeah, so let's talk security.
Sure.
Right? So a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm not comfortable putting my data in the public cloud because, you know, bad things might happen.
Right.
And here's the reality. The reality is, I believe it's going to be far more secure in the public cloud.
I tend to agree.
Because here's the thing. We have teams of like black belt ninja, Navy SEAL security teams whose careers are on the line to make sure that their services are up and running and secure.
Right. They're the best in the world because you could afford to pay them. You run this huge infrastructure.
And so I amortize the cost of the best over such a large number.
Right.
You're right. I can hire the best and I can pay them a lot and I can have a lot of them.
Right.
Most corporations think they're safe and secure, but the reality is they're just not the same level of professionalism that our teams are. Now, some maybe are, but most are not. You know, just take example, you know, like 1 out of 10, we just know 1 out of 10 phishing attack, somebody's going to click on that link.
Yep.
When they click on that link, that machine's owned.
Yeah.
We also know that between one machine being owned, it's typically 24 to 48 hours before the domain controller is owned.
Yeah.
And once the domain controller is owned, typically they're there for either forever or on average it takes over 200 days before they're discovered.
Right.
And mopping that up is a thing. So you know what? Everybody has this supreme confidence in the security of their systems.
Yes.
I will assert that the facts do not substantiate this confidence.
I totally agree with you. And the problem is you find out the hard way.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty much the only way that it gets found out ultimately.
Yeah. Now, let me be clear what I'm saying and not saying. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying, hey, I understand the state of the various cloud people's security today and where they are and where we are with respect to one another. I am saying this. The physics are such that it is undeniably the case that over time, the security in the cloud is going to be far higher than it is on premises.
Yeah.
And maybe that's today. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Maybe it's 2 years from now. Not saying exactly when, but it's undeniable.
And I would also point out that it's only certain categories of security. Like you can build insecure software and run it in the cloud and it's still insecure.
Correct.
So, you know, we're not going to save you from all the mistakes, but there's a whole class of vectors that are gone because you're in that big data center in Ireland or, you know,
well,
in Virginia.
Now, let's talk about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the modern app platform is not an IaaS, right? Instead, you give me a code fragment and I host your code fragment in what? In a fully patched environment.
Right. Always patched.
By the way, the NSA guys, right? I don't know if you saw this. revolutionary. Mm-hmm. First time ever, like the head of the NSA TAO office. You remember those?
Mm-hmm.
Tactics and Operations.
Yes.
He gave a talk at one of the security conferences.
Wow.
Right? And he said, you know, listen, the reality is very different than the way people perceive it.
Yes.
You know, they talk about the all these zero-day attacks. He says, they are very, very rare.
Yeah.
He says, the reality is it's just so easy to get people through phishing attacks and other means.
Yeah. Figuring out real original hacks is way harder than offering up nude pictures of an athlete as long as you'll click.
There you go.
You know, whatever it may be. But yeah, I say it's phishing attacks that actually work. Human exploit seems to work. USB keys in a parking lot seems to work. Right?
It
like
does.
These are the vectors that folks are pushing on.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. What I meant to say was that he said, you know, the way, how do we get through systems? And the answer is unpatched systems.
Yes.
It's just amazing how many times. And there's someone else, I think it was either Cyber Command or the NSA said, when we do failure analysis of all our systems that have been hacked, it's not 0 days. It's unpatched systems. He says, for some reason, you know, as much as security is critical to us, we have a difficult time keeping our systems patched. So when you give me a code fragment, guess what? I'm putting it in a fully patched system.
Right.
And what's it going to do? It's going to run. And what's it going to do? It's going to call a REST API to some microservice. Oh, tell me about that microservice. No, I'm not going to tell you about that microservice. I run that microservice.
Right.
That's my microservice. I got a team of Navy SEALs defending that thing.
Yes.
Oh, and then you know what? Then you call another one. Well, that's a different team. Oh, it's a different team. Yeah. So each one of these microservices, I'm a strong believer that microservices dramatically increase security.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Because when I have a general purpose server and I put software on it, what should it do? And the answer is, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Well, then how do you know whether it's doing something good or something bad? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that's right. Now let's say, hey, let's have a microservice. A microservice says, hey, the higher order bit is just this component. That's what I'm running. I'm running this component.
That's what matters.
So then what software should I have on the system? Well, only the software necessary to run that component.
Exactly.
Get rid of everything else. Oh, well, what network conversations should happen? Well, whatever that service component should be.
And nothing else.
Nothing else. And then, so now it allows you to do whitelisting. So mm-hmm. only that software runs.
Yeah, this complete manifest mindset that we know everything that it's supposed to do.
Because you know what it's supposed to do.
Sure.
So you can put internal firewalls, network ACLs. You can monitor the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that's not right, say something's not right. Now there's a knowledge of what's right and what's wrong because of microservices. So the point again, you now give me a small piece of code. It's calling these microservices.
And you demand this set of parameters around it. So, you know, you're sort of forcing me down this pit of success that in order for me to run that service in there, I'm stealing from Guthrie here.
Yeah. Oh, is it Guthrie?
It was Guthrie lines. It says, I want you to fall into the pit of success.
Okay.
So I'm going to set these guidelines around where in order for me to run your service, you have to tell me all of this, which happens to protect you in the process.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm very bullish on security. I used to be a security pessimist.
Yes.
And because of my thought, you know, my rethinking of microservices, I became a security optimist.
Things have gotten better. Give me 1 second here to pay the bills because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Atlassian, makers of Jira Service Desk. Jira Service Desk is a new service management software that IT teams will love to use. Built on the Jira platform, Jira Service Desk helps you deliver cheerful service, is simple to set up, and so affordable that you won't even need your boss's approval. Try it free today and get a free t-shirt if you're one of the first 100 listeners to sign up at Atlassian.com/runas. All right. I mean, I'm convinced in the security model, and I really like this sort of granular approach, right? Swiss Army knife versus steak knife, right?
Mm.
One blade does one thing. We know it very well. And again, I think it's an architectural pattern.
Yes.
So I think the challenge for a lot of folks is going to be, you know, embracing Azure Stack with an existing piece of software and sort of breaking it into the pieces internally before they ever talk about going to the cloud with it.
Yep.
Like, that just seems like a lot of work. How much of this is operations? How much is just straight dev?
I'd say there's two paths here, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is I'm starting from scratch.
Yep.
Pretty easy.
Yeah,
learn
green
the patterns.
Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Learn the patterns, do the patterns, go that way.
Yeah.
The second is to say, well, hey, you know what? We got a bunch of design patterns around this.
Mm-hmm.
I have this heritage component. Go build new stuff in front of it.
Absolutely.
Build the new stuff according to the new pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, take some of that heritage stuff and break it into components. Where you got one, break it into two.
Right.
Then break it into three.
There's an argument that you'll only do that when you need updates anyway.
Yeah.
Right. That, so you're not really going out specifically to break up an old legacy app. It's that, okay, well, that needs a new feature. Well, while we're doing it, let's use the new pattern.
Yeah.
And you sort of gradually migrate that software across.
Yeah.
It was the ASP.NET guys, again, over on the .NET Rock side, they were talking about, there is one ASP.NET. It doesn't matter if you're building web forms or MVC or all these other approaches. They all work together.
Mm.
You just pick and choose and, you know, can migrate over time. So same thing in the Azure stack.
It's yeah. Like
you don't have to do it all at once.
Those guys are great.
One of the things that I love about Azure, the place, is the analytics, is the dashboards, is my ability to see my app running.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're motivated to tell that to me very clearly because you charge me based on that.
Yeah.
How much of that's going to be visible in these initial versions of the Azure stack?
Some.
Right.
And we'll see.
Okay.
This is the real answer.
So it's still underway. Like,
yeah.
I'm in love with App Insights.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I like,
well, but here's
those
the thing
great
about
emails.
It's awesome. Here's the thing about App Insights. It runs in Azure, mm-hmm. and your application can run sort of anywhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you'll be able to do that. OMS, those are scenarios we're definitely going to nail. Hey, it's still running in Azure, but it can take advantage of
it. But it can talk to my Azure stack on-prem.
Well, it's actually talking to the tenants.
Right.
Those tenants can be an Azure stack. They can be an AWS or Google
right.
Compute or in some VMware environment or Hyper-V environment. They can talk anywhere.
And that probably doesn't poke on the sovereignty element at all. Right?
Yeah,
that I
correct.
Can have those sovereignty elements still on-prem,
yep.
but I still take advantage of these cloud capabilities because they talk to my on-prem stuff.
Yep. Hey, you know, at some point we should talk about some of the design decisions that seemed a little controversial.
Well, I got to think, trying to take, like you said this, I can't just keep chasing this moving line. Like, how did you make the cut? What was the decision points in all of that?
Basically said that one. Not that hard.
What were the controversial parts then?
We recently announced that in version one, we were
right.
only going to support integrated systems.
Interesting.
Now, here's the thing. We got a negative pushback on that. I think people are misunderstanding either one, what we mean by integrated systems.
Yeah.
And then two, I don't think we did a particularly good job explaining why we're making this choice.
Right.
Okay. So first, I think for some people, when they hear integrated systems, they're thinking gold plated, you know, hardware configurations
yeah.
or, you know, these unobtainium, you know, very high margins.
Right.
No. We do not think that at all. We are after high volume components,
mm-hmm.
but high volume components where we can basically work with the vendors to make sure that their drivers work. Let's put it this way. We got to get drivers at work.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're up on the current events. Turns out for some reason, getting a driver that works is hard.
Well, you guys set the bar high, right? Like you're requiring proper certificates. Like I appreciate the quality of the drivers, but I don't have to write them.
Yeah.
I just know they're a high bar to cross these days.
Well, indeed. But it turns out that, you know, we thought we had a high bar and then people deploy these network drivers and they didn't work.
Yeah.
They don't
cause
work
problems.
Under stress.
Yeah.
So we, in fact, set up this private cloud simulator to really beat the heck out of network drivers. And guess what? Lots and lots of problems.
Interesting.
So we are working with specific vendors with, you know, making sure their firmware gets up to date. Same thing with disk drives and all the components, right? So now here's the thing. We are going to manage the full life cycle of every component in the Azure stack.
Interesting.
Okay. So that means we're going to be updating the firmware of the disk drives.
Wow.
The disk drives of the controllers, the BIOS and the motherboards. We're going to do updating the operating system.
So it's my on-prem gear, but you're still doing certain things to this.
Yeah. So here's again, the way you want to think about this is, hey, as consistent with Azure as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. When you deal with Azure, do you get to pick what hardware you run on?
I have no idea what hardware I'm running on. It's not my business.
Exactly. So that's the mindset, right? And so, no, you don't have that choice. You'll have some degree of choice. We have three vendors,
right.
Dell, HP, and Lenovo. But again, you're going to have some degree of configurability. You know, how much storage do I want? What's type of storage? But by and large, we're going to manage everything and we have to manage it in such a way that provides, you know, service aware updating.
Okay.
So
let me back up a notch
yep.
here, Mr. Snover, because what you're really saying is you're not running this on your existing gear.
Correct.
You will be buying dedicated gear for running Azure Stack on-prem.
Exactly.
That
correct.
Is the bottom line.
Yep.
And don't worry, it's going to be great. But I can see why that's controversial too, because it's like, well, that's expensive.
Yeah.
You know, you're speccing. I guarantee you this is not the cheapest stuff in Dell's catalog.
Yeah, I don't know. Could be.
Yeah. But I mean, also get what you're doing, right? It's like, this is how you guarantee a quality experience.
And, you know, it's worth pointing out here, you know, Azure Stack's not going to be for everybody.
Right.
But for the people who use it and it is for, we think the benefits are going to be enormous.
Right.
But its benefit, its value is its very strong point of view. Right?
Right.
Its value is its strong point of view.
Yeah.
And that strong point of view is not terribly negotiable, right? If it turns out that you have a strong opinion about something and how the infrastructure should be done,
right,
chances are you're better off doing a virtualization. Now, with virtualization play, we provide you a great set of tools. Windows Server 2016, awesome set of tools.
Yes.
System Center, awesome set of tools. And with these tools, you can pick any hardware you want.
Yeah.
You can pick any NIC you want. You can pick any drives you want, any configuration you want, but you are the one responsible for making it work.
Right.
Right. And often what you find is once you finally get that working, it's like, oh my heavens, that was so difficult.
Yeah.
Don't change anything.
Yeah.
And we're not in the don't change anything business.
No.
We're in the Azure consistency business. We're in the make sure you're secure business.
Right.
So we're going to be updating you frequently with security fixes. We're going to be updating frequently with cloud updates. And it has to work. I mean, I talked to a customer this week who had dumped vBlock. I said, oh, really? That's interesting. Tell me why. He said, oh, yeah, you would be interested in that. You're trying to do something similar. I said, well, ish. He says, well, the problem was they didn't deliver what we thought they were going to deliver. And we had every time they updated, we had problems.
Right.
And we break availability of our applications. So that's just not the deal.
No.
Well, here's the thing. That's the deal. That's what we have to deliver on. And so in order to deliver that, we've chosen to do integrated systems so that we have tight control over everything. Now, let me be clear. Microsoft's DNA is partners.
Right.
Always has been, is, always will be.
Yep.
We love it when partners get rich. We do. I mean, other people, I think, they see a partner get rich. They said, oh, that should have been my money. That's not Microsoft's DNA at all. We like partners being rich. So there are two factors here. One is we're going to build a repeatable, reliable process.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to build a repeatable, reliable process that works across a wide range of scenarios. And then a repeatable, reliable process that works across a wide range of scenarios in adverse conditions.
Right.
When stuff's breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can successfully achieve that, then we'll go back and say, now, how can I loosen up the hardware configurations while still providing a consistent, reliable, repeatable process in adverse conditions. So we will open it up at some point, but only after we are sure we can
do so. And you've spent some time with this. I mean, this is the first iteration of this as well. And my gut now says, when I really think about that, it's like, I'll get this from a service provider. This probably makes more, if data sovereignty is my concern, find a provider in my locale, you know, that qualifies for whatever my constraint is and let them deal with it.
Yeah.
At a fee.
Some people will. Yep.
Some of this will be almost size of organization, you know, cost requirements and so forth. But
yeah.
I mean, there's a poke at the sovereignty when you're saying you're updating the gear. Right.
Exactly.
Like all of a sudden it's like, hey, I wanted this for myself. And you're saying you still need access.
Even more so, to be clear, there's a term I call the sealed host.
Right.
Right. So the sealed host means on the physical hardware itself, we run the host software, and that's sealed, which is to say that I control what software that is, and it's not open to third parties.
Right.
The only third-party software running that will be drivers that I worked with integrated system vendors.
The certified vendors.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And some people say, well, now, wait a second. You know, our corporation mandates this security agent be running on every Windows Server host. And the answer is, if that's really important to you, you want to go down the virtualization road.
Sure.
Because this is a sealed host.
Right.
Now, again,
I'm suspecting that your security standards for Azure Stack are going to be pretty darn high.
Exactly. And so basically, here's the model. In the past, as I've worked with customers, because I've been doing this a long time, I'd say, hey, why haven't you picked up the latest version of the operating system? I mean, I talked to you about what you need, and this is perfect. And they said, oh, we'd love to. However, we use this third-party software. Mm-hmm. And that third-party software, they say they don't support that new version of the operating system. Or, hey, we use this third-party software, and they support the new version of the operating system, but I have to buy a new version.
Right.
They want me to relicense.
It's too much money.
That's really expensive.
Yeah.
Or I'm using this third-party software, and they're now out of business.
Yeah.
And so I'm never going to upgrade.
I'm stuck.
So here's my point. That third-party software integrated the way we traditionally integrate software introduces friction to be able to always keep up to date with Azure. And what did I say? The most important thing about Azure Stack is being consistent with Azure.
Absolutely.
So I can never allow anything that will block the orderly migration to the latest version of Azure. Now, again, our DNA is partners.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reality is that that integration is a conflict because of the old way we used to do integrations.
Sure.
We used to integrate things by putting them on the same box and integrating them with DLLs. And so instead, a more modern integration model is through microservices, which is to say, hey, we will work with various people to say, let's establish a protocol. So what we want to do is we had one customer that was very interested in this, but they wanted to have their intrusion detection agent on the host. I said, yeah, that's not going to work. But we worked with them, and then we modified Windows Server 2016 so that our software-defined networking had port mirroring.
Interesting.
And so now we that was below the cut line.
Right.
After talking to them, we moved it above the cut line. Now they've got an API that they can go configure port mirroring, and all the packets that come in will mirror via a protocol so that they can inspect them on a different
on a VM.
In a VM, exactly.
Right. Because this piece is Azure Stack with those sealed machines, doesn't mean I can't have surrounded it with other VMs that are communicating at certain levels.
Exactly. So that's the heart of what I want to say is, you know, I'm sort of being pretty hardcore about this sealed host.
Right.
And that does not mean that we won't integrate with third parties, but it does mean that I won't integrate with third parties using the traditional mechanisms.
Right.
We will integrate with them through new mechanisms, and in some cases, we already have them. In other cases, people should talk to us and we'll build them.
It's also, you just described a very clearly defined mechanism, a specific set of ports and a specific set of communications with a specific security constraint external to the sort of ring zero behaviors of a given machine. Right?
Yes.
It's like, that's the important part is you know what's in the core of all these machines, so you have confidence in how it's going
to
behave.
Yeah, and you know, some people have this reaction to it, but then we just say, hey, you know what? You're already doing this. Hey,
yeah.
What do you mean? I said, well, okay, let's talk about your SAN.
Yeah.
Right? Let's talk about your SAN. Did you put your security agent in their SAN? And like, well, what are you talking about? It's a SAN.
Yeah.
It's like, well, right. How about your Cisco router?
Right.
Did you put your security agent in the Cisco router? Like, what are you talking about? It's a Cisco router. It's
right.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're sort of, you're moving that line for what the sort of trusted devices look like.
Exactly correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, once you explain it to people, and again, I think the challenge is we didn't fully articulate sort of the architectural challenges and what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Right.
And I think once you explain that, a bunch of people are like, oh, I get it. And they either say, yeah, you know what? I think that's great. I'm going to be in. Or they say, hey, you know, I still have a strong opinion about this. Maybe I should go down the virtualization path.
Well, there is a sense of partnership here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not, I'm going to buy it and I'm done.
Right.
Like it's never going to be like that.
Right.
Actually, I mean, part of this makes me think about what the expense of this actually looks like. Obviously buying new hardware and so forth, but is there a licensing agreement I have with Microsoft? Is there a monthly cost to be in Azure Stack on premise?
We have not yet disclosed the business model for Azure Stack. Yep.
Cause it's,
that's coming.
Cause it is a durable relationship. Like you're going to have, if I go down this path, that's a minimum of 3 years, you know, to justify that equipment and utilization and so forth.
Like, sure.
I got to think there's some kind of agreement we need to have so that I'm sure you're upholding your half of the deal on this and we sort of understand how we're going to work together.
Like, sure.
These are not small things to make that happen.
Yep.
This is not just the usual set of hardware with a new set of APIs.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing I'd say is that, you know, it is a new world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this great phrase, you know, I talk about it long form, Jeffrey Moore, value, you know, core activities, context activities.
Yep.
Somebody summed it up really nicely recently. And I wish I could remember who because I'd love to give them credit.
Mm-hmm.
They said the model is that companies should build the things that differentiate them and buy the things they don't.
The same way we don't make our own electricity, we don't pull our own water, we don't build telephone systems anymore.
And so my question to companies is I ask you to sit down and really think through, if your business is selling airplane seats,
right.
If your business is selling cars, if your business is this, how much does, you know, your ability to put together the components of some hardware vendor's catalog really help you put somebody in an airline seat?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is, not at all.
Yeah.
And
not anymore,
right now,
certainly.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when bringing computing into your business space was an innovation. Now it's basic requirement. It's like having a fax machine.
Exactly. And so we think that that level of infrastructure is something you should just buy, and then you focus in on running it.
Right.
Or even there, maybe you don't. Maybe you have a service provider run it for you. You focus in on the business applications to drive your business forward. Now, what that means is a lot of people are probably going to do something a little different than what they're doing today. And I do believe this. I believe that this cloud model will be side by side with virtualization for a very long time. Let me be super clear about that. If you're thinking, hey, I'm going to go all cloud right now, like on premises, like shift it all, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
No, hybrid's here to stay.
Hybrid's here to stay, but hybrid cloud's here to stay. Mm-hmm. But also, I believe people will continue to do virtualization for a very long time.
I totally agree.
You know, take a look at Windows Server 2016. It is a rockin' OS.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see that. Did you see my favorite part of Windows Server 2016? Well, you know, there's so many, but this one, just every time I say it, my mouth is delighted, right? And that is, Windows Server 2016 supports 24 terabytes of RAM.
Yes.
24 terabytes of RAM. I can never say that enough. And it's like, wait, are you saying 24 terabytes of RAM? Yes. Well, but did you say 24 terabytes? Yes. Yeah. It's just insane. By the way, some people think, oh, well, you know, what are you doing? Just like
SQL Server.
You got it. We did a show showing off.
Yeah. We're over on the .NET Rock side. We did a show with Lindsay Allen, who's one of the senior SQL folks. We're talking about HTAP, and she talked about a 24 terabyte machine. I think I dropped the microphone, and also talked about when they first got it together and fired up SQL Server and put it to work. It used it all.
Yeah.
Like it will, if you've got Hackathon, a problem space that big. Yeah.
Yeah. And then SAP HANA, another thing.
I'm just trying to imagine how much you spent to buy 24 terabytes of RAM.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That is a big number.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about the power plug. And then, you know, the VMs, you can have 12 terabyte VMs.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
It's the next set of scaling levels, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like Server 2016 reminds me of Server 2000. Like it was just such a big jump from the old NT versions. Like it's one of those breakthrough versions of the OS.
Yeah, I have to say I'm pretty proud of 2016. Mm-hmm. It is the largest architectural changes we've made in the OS since really the first version, really.
Yeah, no, it is a very big jump. And it's interesting to see this dance of stuff we learn in the cloud and how we implement it on-prem and what pieces need to be where. Like it is an interesting time. And, you know, one of the challenges we have on Run As every time is this sense, I get emails from folks in the IT space saying, my job's going away. But every time I have a conversation like this, it's like, there's so much to do. And it's only getting more interesting. Yeah. If you really just want to spin screwdrivers and stick cards in chassis, you got a problem.
Yep.
You know, maybe there's some places for you, but if you like the company you're working with, there's so much to do in that space now. Getting away from those parts, right? The creating user accounts, that's automatable. Like, and I blame you for that. Just, you know, PowerShell's taken on a lot of those responsibilities and made it easier to onboard and so on, so that we have time to provide even more value to our organizations.
I agree. And just as, you know, when we introduced plug and play, we did not have this horde of admins out on the street unemployed with their bent paper clips because they had spent all their time.
I was so good at setting IRQs and you took it away from me.
Exactly. I was so good with the paper clip and the dip switches, you know,
click, 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 click.
And all of a sudden you can just plug in a device and it works.
It
and you know what?
Out.
I don't think anybody went unemployed.
No, I don't
they
think
just started
true.
To do a much better set of things that added more value to their company.
Yeah. The truth continues to be there. There's more work than people doing it still.
Yeah.
And you're just opening the horizons even further with this latest set of tools. There is even more work to do.
And again, the people who can leverage the IT to really drive their business forward, it's just stunning. Look, the clearest example of that is what was that application that Facebook bought? WhatsApp?
Yes.
How many
for
was it? Like,
billions? $10 billion?
I think it was more than that.
Yeah.
People should look it up on the internet. I think it was 15 people and like $27 billion.
Right.
Incredible business value from a small number of people. Why? Well, part of it was they had the right application.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing was, you know, so people just say, oh, well, that's a fluke. No, no, no. They had incredible scale.
Yes.
They had incredible scale with a very small number of people.
Those billion
because
scales.
They were doing it right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's my point is that if you stop messing around with the, the low-level stuff, mm-hmm. and figure out how to leverage technology to drive your business forward, the amplification, it can be enormous.
Yeah.
And when you are the person amplifying your business,
creating that multiplier,
that's a pretty good seat to be in.
Yeah, I like that a lot. We are in the position to provide more value to organizations than just about anybody else.
Yep.
Many, many orders of magnitude improvement. Mr. Snover, you have gone long, sir.
Okay.
But worth every moment of it. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really fun. And what a great show. Thanks for coming to Ignite.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.